Devices Radio Network.
Hey guys, welcome to the next episode of Drugs and Stuff. Today we are going to, first of all, we got a couple topics. Dave isn't feeling so well. We're going to talk about what's going on with him. We also have the topic of obesity is now considered to be a disability in the United States. Why SARMs over oral steroids, carb cycling, nutritional changes while dealing with an injury, and a bunch more. So stick around, guys, for this next episode of Drugs and Stuff. Drugs and Stuff is for informational and educational purposes only. Well, we're already into the show, so let's just roll with it. We're not even going to do another an official intro. Guys, okay. we're already recording Drugs and Stuff here with Dave Crossland, of course. We were just talking to Aaron Hudson, who is a really great amateur competitive bodybuilder over there in the UK. He's only an hour and a half away from Dave, yet Dave won't even take the time to acknowledge that he's alive and hang out with him or train with him. He's a real mean. Dave's getting really mean. He's got a prostate infection right now, and he's very grumpy. Okay, Dave's very grumpy. I want to put that out there first. Dave, you have a great attitude nonetheless, man, as always. And I wanted to ask you about that to start. What the hell is going on? Normally we record Tuesday. This is Wednesday. You were in the hospital or before that. Tuesday you got home. Monday you got home. You were feeling okay. You said, yeah, I'm ready to record Tuesday. Tuesday came around. You said you were in too much pain. You're not doing too much better today, but we are recording. What's up, man?
Well, Wednesday last week, I got up for a piss about 2-3 o'clock in the morning. Everything is normal. Went back to bed and suddenly I've got pain. By the morning, that was me then, every 20 minutes up needing a piss, and it was burning like hell when I went for a piss. And then 10, 20 minutes later, I had to go for another piss. So I didn't get any more sleep that night. Ugh. I had to work the next day. And then the next night, I managed to get into, that was the Wednesday night, went to work the next day. So this is Thursday. Got into the doctor's Thursday evening, and he suspected it was a urine infection, but it's quite rare that a man gets a urine infection. It's not a common thing anyway.
Yeah.
So we were trying to work out where it could have come from. No idea. The best we could come up with, I use a lot of public toilets because I'm on the road a lot, but to be fair, I don't think that was... I don't know, that was just stabbing in the dark. Anyway, started me on antibiotics, and the pain changed. And so the Thursday night, again, every 20 to 30 minutes, awake up, trying to have a piss, burning like hell. But I started to get a pain in my gooch, which is the area from the back of your balls to your arsehole.
That's a technical term, guys. That is what, if you were...
It's called the gooch.
You can see that in the medical textbooks. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. And it was just getting more and more painful.
Yeah.
Now, the doctor said to me, if the antibiotics haven't got rid of it by, which would have been Saturday, get back into medical, get somewhere, go to see medical. So, by Saturday, I can't sit down. Swelling... Though it's not overly pronounced, when I sit down, it feels like someone's trying to shove a fist up the back of my balls. Constant pain at the base of my knob. Really starting to struggle to pass now. It's very, very painful to pass water. So I got in touch with the 24-hour helpline thing, and they said, look, you really need to get into the hospital because obviously I've got renal issues, and they were concerned about that.
Yeah.
So I went in. They were a bit dismissive. And so within the hospital, they have a 24-hour doctor service. So you can either go to accident and emergency, or you can go to the out-of-hours GP.
Yeah.
So they fobbed me off to the out-of-hours GP, which I was a bit annoyed about, but it's like, all right, fair enough. So anyway, he said, no, he said, I think this is your prostate. I want you in now. So they admitted me. I was examined that night, and by this point, I can't sit. Standing's getting difficult. I've got to walk with my leg splayed because it's so painful.
Oh my God.
And I started to feel it literally, and this is going to sound weird, but it felt like there was a tennis ball up my backside.
And there probably literally is, man.
Just... So at this point, I've got so much pressure on my bladder, I can't maintain a constant stream. And I've now got pressure on my back passage, so I can't have a shit.
Ugh.
So this is this point, Saturday is 2 days since I've last been for a shit. So they kept me in overnight. I got examined by a junior doctor that night, and he said, it's not your prostate. So he says, I don't know what's going on. We'll get you in for a CT scan in the morning.
That's even scarier if they don't know.
So, but my kidney function came back really good.
Really? So it's improving. Yeah,
it's back up at 27. It dropped to 25. It's back up at 27. So it was
What's normal, okay. Dave?
For what's healthy, above 60.
Above 60, but it is a little bit better. Yeah. Okay, good.
But I've been running at 21 for the last 3-4 years. So it's a marked improvement.
Okay, good.
So, anyway, specialist urologist comes the next morning, obviously, rubber glove on, bend over, one of them jobs. And Jesus Christ, I got to bed and punched him. No warning, no anything, just a fist up my ass as hard as he bloody could, which hurt a lot. A big dig around, and then he says, yes, your prostate's swollen. I'm like, it took about 3-4 hours for the pain to die down after that. I'm not exaggerating. It was fucking agony. So he said, antibiotics and home. So came home Sunday. Monday felt actually not bad at all. I got a bit of a better night's sleep. I got about 4 hours sleep Monday and a Sunday night.
Yeah.
So I felt a bit better. And I was reasonably active and felt really well. Still painful. Still couldn't sit down. Or had to sit, but sit leaning right forward or leaning right back. Couldn't sit normally.
Yeah.
And I still hadn't had a shit.
That's so bad, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's 3 days at this point, getting into four. So, got shitloads of, stoolies, orals, bang them in.
Orals? Like D-ball?
No, liquid shit like this.
Oh, I gotcha.
Awful stuff. But anyway, that did start to take a bit of effect and things started to move a little bit. And it's just the swelling's gone down. So, last night, I slept through, apart from waking up once, which is good for me anyway. But I just feel really tired. But I'm on a gram of antibiotics for a month.
That's bad. That's a lot, man.
That's my guts are going to be fucked.
You're using probiotics, I assume.
Well, I'm having to, because otherwise my gut flora is going to be absolutely trashed.
Yeah, which it probably will be anyway, but... Maybe yeah, damage control a little, you know.
But it's still painful to piss, but I can piss nearly normally now.
Yeah.
And it's like sat here now, I get a little bit of a pain in my stomach and it just feels like I'm sat on one of my nuts a little bit. Mm. But yeah, very painful experience. Still don't know how I've caused it. There's a few things that it could be stress, it could be this, it could be that. But the worst thing was on the Friday, had a really big presentation down at Birmingham Police.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all day presentation.
And you did? Were you able to do it?
I did it, but I wasn't. I drove down, and I was literally like driving down there in the morning.
Oh God!
Falling asleep. I was fucked. Absolutely fucked. Scared, drinking too much. Obviously, I then need to go to the loo, and it was really painful to go. But I couldn't miss it. I had too much riding on it because there was a lot of key figures going to it that could lead to a lot of work in the future. So,
were you able to kind of like at least give a disclaimer, like, "Hey guys, I'm under the weather. I'm dealing with this issue, but I'm really glad I can be here."
Yeah, it was it was an informal presentation, so it wasn't a problem on the fact of the formalities. I wasn't
okay.
It was me and 20 people in a room sat down chatting. It wasn't like I was stood up on a podium, an auditorium, and had to be really super professional.
I see.
But it was just difficult, to say the least. But luckily, I was a bit fresher when I drove back. I'd have woken up, I had a second wind by then.
Okay.
But there was reps from UKAD there and all sorts, so I didn't want to miss it. I wanted to make sure I nailed it. And feedback seems to have been very, very good so far from the actual presentation.
All right.
So I'm just going to sit and wait now and see if anything comes in.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I know watching the under construction films, and I know what it's like being a bodybuilder. you're a man who can tolerate a lot and still keep pushing forward. So, you know, I appreciate what you're going through, man. And I feel for you. It's freaking rough.
Within reason, I don't see the point in, you know, when you're ill, you're ill.
Yeah.
So it's like, I came down here and did a bit of work a couple of days. I couldn't do a lot because I couldn't sit for very long. But it was like, well, I'm only going to sit up fucking stairs and watch TV and do absolutely, I might as well be productive. I'm still going to be in pain. I'm still going to be pissed off. I'm still going to feel like shit. So what's the difference if I feel like shit and do something being productive than feel like shit and do something wasting my time?
Yeah.
So, and at end of the day, I mean, I told a few clients, but they're not interested. I mean, deep down, I don't mean this nastily, they're not really interested. They want their information that they're paying for. They want the service that they're paying for. They don't want someone going, oh, I'm ill, you have to wait 3 days.
No, of course not. No. Of course not.
So what's the point of sitting there and moaning about it and bitching? You might as well just fucking get your head down and do the best you can.
Yeah.
I had to say to a couple, look, I can't get back to tomorrow. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
I don't see the point. And then obviously I've spent all this today.
Yeah.
Pain in the ass, but anyhow.
Well, listen, I had a topic I wanted to bring up to you. Looks like our connection's getting a little choppy. Do I look okay to you?
You never look okay to me.
We're a little bit choppy, but we'll hang in there. I'm sure that it's going to clear up. I saw this the other day. I thought this was really interesting. Over here in the U.S., there was a situation that came up. Basically, Washington State Supreme Court rules that obesity is a disability. As of July 11th, obesity is considered a disability. It's very professional, Dave. Very professional.
It was actually an important call, but I blocked it for you, so shut up. Go on.
Obesity is a disability in the state of Washington as a result of a 7-2 Supreme Court ruling. This court decision means that it is protected under state anti-discrimination law. Therefore, according to the court filing, it is illegal for employers.
I'm gonna have to do. Sorry, I apologize.
All right.
Hello.
Guys, this is live.
Sorry, I'm just in the middle of an interview.
This is live podcasting here, and this is what we get. We get Dave Crossland taking
Thank
phone
you very
calls.
Much, Cheers, pal.
I'm gonna give him shit for this too. Watch.
Sorry about that.
Oh, you back?
Yeah. Oh, don't get all uppity and snotty. Phone call halfway through the bloody thing.
You back? You with us, Dave?
No.
You want anything? You want us to do anything else for you? You want to take a little time? We'll stretch your toes a little. See, I can give it right back to you. All right. So
stop picking on me. I'll get my mum to get you. So basically, this means it's illegal for you to call me a fat bastard now because it's discrimination.
Yes. Well, here's the deal, man. What could happen is it could end up transpiring into all sorts of issues. Basically, I mean, once this occurs, you know, there's been all sorts of complaining in the past, like, you know, airline seats are only so big. And if somebody who's obese wants to fly, they're required to purchase two seats if they would take up two seats worth of space. And there's been people that have... What's that?
Yeah, aviation law actually states that the airline can refuse entry if you do not fit in the seat properly, because I've had this as a problem.
So, but here's the thing, though.
Safety issue.
There's a safety issue there. But now are they going to have to start? I mean, here's an example. Once this is now considered to be a disability, I mean, it's the same thing like, you know, they have access for wheelchairs because people in wheelchairs are also disabled. Are they going to have to make the same access for an obese person? You know, whereas, okay, well, in that case, because you're a special person, you get to board the plane first. And not only that, you get this luxurious large seat. You know, you get two seats for the same price because you're disabled. You know, things like that.
they technically, yes, they would potentially have to provide fat seats, for want of a better term. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because there are people that, because of their obesity, are disabled. They can't walk. They can't do this. They can't do that.
Yeah.
But that should be a recognition, I think, of disability based on their poor mobility.
Yeah.
Now, their poor mobility is due to obesity, correct. But, you know, if somebody has got to the point where mobility is now a function because of the problem because of their size, or their ability to function as a person is a problem because of their size, then I would more look at the fact that it's their mobility that's causing the issue. Because when you start, I mean, we had it over here a little bit where they were looking at regarding a disability and that you could apply for, because you can get what they call blue badges over here. Parking close to the entrance to anything is generally disabled parking.
Yeah, we have that too. Yeah.
You can only park in a disabled space if you have a badge.
Right, right.
But that's your parking exemption for, that's your certificate to say that basically you can park, but you've got an exemption for parking. And they did say that they were going to start letting fatties have them.
Really?
Which, the problem then is that you get people that are still perfectly mobile.
Yeah.
And from almost enabled of being fat twats.
Sure. When in
society starts to give it to, yeah, because they start saying, well, okay, you don't have to walk now.
Yeah.
And okay, we'll make this special exception for you.
Which is only going to make it worse.
Not really in that category. No, it is, because you're not really in that category yet.
Yeah.
You're not in a wheelchair because you're that fat, you can't move. You know what I mean? You still have mobility. So, yeah, it's, we seem to be in a society where we're forced, or we feel we have to more and more accept minorities. And I don't mean minorities in ethnic or that sort of thing. I mean groupings of people that may be the extreme end of something.
Yeah.
And the more we're pushed to accept that and normalize that, the more it encourages the people that do that to expand on that.
Sure.
And I'm not, that can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing. So when you look at obesity, which is obviously very, very poor for people's health, the more we normalize that, and the more we accept that, and the more we make accommodation for that, the more, the less discouraging, should I say, it is to be obese.
True, true. I know, you know, and we're very encouraging over here too. To, I guess, you know, I can think of a couple situations. I think of, like, at Walmart. I know that the motorized chairs that they have, they're in high demand over there. They keep a large number of them in the store. I know that they've gone up in weight capacity. I don't know what the old one was, but I know that they had moved up because there was an issue that the chairs would only hold 400 pounds and that they wanted to be able to supply a chair that would hold more than 400. There was an issue there with some of the grocery stores, and I know that they had to upgrade those services. On the other hand, you've got places like IKEA. Do you guys have IKEA over there?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so. So, because I know they're worldwide. You know the way IKEA is laid out, you go up that escalator and you walk through the maze. They do not supply those carts, those driving carts to ride through. I've known of one person who was obese who said, "Well, I'm just not going to shop there." And but IKEA is okay with that, I guess. IKEA is okay with not having that demographic of people come in their store. But on the other hand, if everybody were to do that, then I think that it would encourage people to walk more. I think that walking more is a good idea. And I don't want to sound like I'm anti-PC or I'm trying to make a statement, but in reality, I mean, the person who has that badge that's parking close to the door that is completely capable of walking, ideally, they should park at the other end of the lot. They could walk further, you know, get back in shape.
The other thing is as well that this inclusion, this like you say, we've seen it with lots of other things. As tolerances lower, the extremities increase. because the previous extremities that were very, very shocking now aren't shocking because people have got more liberal tolerance or whatever it was.
Sure.
So as a result of that, they've got more extreme.
Sure.
And it's you see stuff, you know, body transformation stuff, so or things like that. They've got more and more extreme as previous levels are no longer regarded as being that shocking, so they've pushed further and further and further and further. And so, you know, I think that we will start to, like you said, Walmart have had to go on, £400 is big in anyone's book. You know, having been at that weight, I know how demanding that sort of weight is on your body, and I also know how much abuse food to maintain that sort of weight. And that's a lot. And so to get to the point where that is no longer adequate to such a level that a large number of the carts have to be replaced with stronger models,
yeah,
it is only a sign that the problem's worsening, that it's not getting better.
Yeah, yeah, it's frightening.
I read something the other day, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, but it was a psychology piece, and I just caught a little bit of it that was posted up on Facebook. But basically, the general gist of it was: the more you create labels,
mm-hmm.
and the more you identify a group, the more isolated that group becomes, and the more tribal as human beings we become.
Hmm.
The less you identify or signal out differences within people, the less tribal we are. So the more you say, well, I'm obese, I have rights, the more people will actually section you off into a group.
Okay, yeah.
The less you use your size as something that you need to be accommodated for, the less people consider your size.
Yeah. I can see that for sure. You're not bringing attention to it.
It goes with sexuality. It goes with religion. It goes with pretty much everything.
Hmm.
And the two seem to feed each other. So the more you stand out about who you are, what you are, and you have this and you have that, right, the more the rest of society will judge you.
Yeah. Yeah, I can totally see what you're saying.
We are apparently tribal in nature.
I could see that for sure. One of our listeners, David Spencer, said, check out Tess Holliday is her name. She has 1.9 million followers. She's following 2,000 people on Instagram, and she is quite an obese person. Now here's my thought though. My thought is it's definitely, I think, okay, you know, to embrace who you are. I think that's been the issue. Yeah. I think from the beginning is that it used to be that people who were overweight, it was something that we shunned, something that we made fun of, and, you know, something that was thought of as like a terrible thing. I think that, we've just swung too far into the opposite direction. You know, it's okay for somebody, I think, to celebrate who they are. But this woman, I feel, is probably, I'm looking at her pictures right now. We have them up on the screen. I think that she's going to die young because of her weight. This is not healthy. And I don't think that it's a good idea.
Well, how big is she?
You know, Dave, I can't put a number on that. You know what, man? It's
what's that? What's the name again?
Tess Holliday. I mean, she's a big girl for sure, but you know, nonetheless, though.
If people, she is a big loss.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with celebrating who you are, but I mean, realistically, though, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm in recovery. I don't know if you and I have ever talked about that, but I'm in recovery. I do a 12-step program, and you know, I feel that, you know, we could use that people in recovery, drugs and alcohol, could definitely use assistance to help with that. I do believe that it is something that, you know, we could use help with. I think that, that there should be special consideration taken to change that. I don't think that we should be encouraged to continue drinking and to continue using drugs. And I see celebrating this level of obesity in a similar way that I see celebrating the use of drugs and alcohol in a negative way, that this is definitely going to be detrimental on her life. And instead of celebrating her, I wouldn't want to say put her down, but I definitely would want to encourage her to change. And maybe instead of say giving people a parking badge and giving people disability because of obesity. And of course, there's going to be special circumstances. Not everybody is obese because they eat too much. You know, there's health conditions in there, but some way or another, there's got to be help for people. And that if somebody wants to embrace that help, then I believe that they can change. And I feel like that's what we should be encouraging, not celebrating this and saying, you be you.
I don't give a shit if they want to be 400 pound. I don't give a shit if they want to be 500 pound, 600 pound, 700 pound, if they're happy and they are genuinely happy, because most people lie. And that's nothing to do with the fact that because they're big, most people lie. A lot of people are happy and will never ever admit they're not happy, for the simple reason is they feel it's damaging to them. But I've got an issue with that. But at the same time, you accept the consequences of what you do.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. I would like to see everybody work toward being healthy. Oh, I'm going to do that to you now, Dave.
Obviously. Yeah, no, unprofessional, very unprofessional, amateur. Get me Scott Stevenson. I want someone decent to be on the podcast. I took the piss with drugs. I have heart issues. I'd like to think that I don't milk it. I don't use it. I don't look for any accommodation because of it.
No, but you've also changed. You know, you've changed and you're helping others to change too.
Yes, but I don't regret my action either.
Yeah. But you don't encourage others to do that either, do you?
I don't encourage, but at the same time, I do tell them it's their choice, but just be aware that these are the potential consequences. As long as you're willing to accept those consequences, then that's fine.
If you could have your way, Dave, if I came to you and I was like, I want to get to 415 pounds and I'm going to do anything it takes, I don't care if my kidneys fail in the process. I mean, you wouldn't want that, you know?
No, of course you don't want that, but you've got to, my big issue with all of this is you have to accept the consequences for your actions. To take responsibility for your actions, and you can't then sit there and go, well, I can't do it because of this, and it's everyone. No, it's your fault.
Yeah.
My kidneys are fucked. That's my fault.
Yeah.
My heart's knackered. That's my fault. Nobody else's. Nobody else's. I did that. And I will never, or I hope I never, ever try and blame that on circumstance or this or that. It was my decision. And as a result, I have to carry that, and that's my choice. No one else's problem. So I don't. I bring it up in this because it's relevant to what we talk about.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't say anything. In fact, quite ironically, as you know, I'm on a modeling agency, and every now and again I get a bit of work.
Yes, sir.
I need to tell you something about that as well.
Okay.
I got a message this week. Can I be on a? It's a morning television program.
Really?
Yeah, and it was about the conversation was that people that are obese or have high BMIs, actually, was what they were saying.
Okay.
Can still be fit and healthy.
Hmm.
And I just sent back, I'm not fit and healthy.
Are you going to do the show?
No, I can't.
Okay.
How would it look, me standing on there pretending to be fit and healthy when I'm not?
Hmm.
And there would be somebody that would write in or put a comment and say, Dave's not fit and healthy at all. The fat git's got knackered heart, he's got knackered kidneys.
Yeah.
He's probably far from fit and healthy as you can describe. So I thought that was quite ironic when I got that message this week. Can you do this? You're fit and healthy. And I said back, I said, I'm not actually. I'm this, this, and this. And I went, oh, okay.
Well, sorry.
But, you know, I mean, that's if you want to eat yourself to an early grave and you want to go on Instagram and if you truly enjoy, and you may truly enjoy that. I'm not that person. I'm not in that person's shoes. I'm not in that person's head. I don't know if they do truly enjoy it.
Yeah.
The you know, you speak to anyone who's a psychologist and they'll say, oh, no, they're not happy. They're doing it because of this. They're doing it because of that. Fuck knows. I really don't know. But the bottom line is that's your life. You have that choice. But at the same time, you have to take responsibility for that. And
I like that.
The changes with stuff like this, where there's changes in laws, it starts to remove the responsibility away from those individuals to be responsible for the consequences of what they did. Mm. Because now society is starting to happen to accommodate them.
Mm.
Now society is being told you must change how you operate to accommodate this person because they couldn't keep the mouth closed.
Yeah.
And that's where you start getting an area where I'm a bit, ooh, I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. All right, well, listen, let's take a quick break, Dave. We actually have a commercial now, believe it or not. We do. So let's run that quick commercial. And guys, we'll be back in just a minute. Talk more to Dave. And we've got some questions. Everybody who posted up questions here in the thread, we will get to those too. Guys, we'll be back in just a second. Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of Drugs and Stuff, and thank you for A, not fast-forwarding through the commercials, and B, for just being you, because if nobody told you today, you're freaking awesome. Yeah, I said it. You are. I'd like to take a minute to thank our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. I'm really grateful that we can have a company like True Nutrition that supports us, because it's a company that I believe in and I feel 100% confident in saying, yes, you guys can buy these supplements. They are for a good, reasonable price for what they are selling, high quality supplements. And they have products for, you know, all levels of finances. So if you have a lot of money, you could spend a lot of money. If you don't, then you can definitely scrimp and save. When I wasn't making a lot of money, I definitely shopped at True Nutrition because I could find the best deals there. And I found a lot of supplements that would have cost me a lot more had I gone to a company that had all the flashy advertising and labels and everything else. These guys save all that, you know, and then they don't have to charge you guys as much for supplements. So it's a company that has been around since I got into serious competitive bodybuilding. I've been using them since the start, and you guys can use them too. TrueNutrition.com. Our code is ADVICES. And also, I would like to take a minute to shout out Dave Crossland. You guys can reach out to Dave. Check out his website, crosslands.org.uk. And over there, Dave has a monthly membership site, as well as you can reach out to him if you are interested in working with him. He likes to specialize in helping people grow incredible amounts of muscle. So reach out to Dave if you feel like you're clicking with him. Feel like that could work, you know, he could be your next coach. So find out more about his services over there at crosslands.org.uk. All right, guys, let's get back to the program. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. We just got to talk about a bunch of fun topics. We had some questions here. Dave, before we get to that, was there something you wanted to tell me about ugly models?
Yeah. Yes, I got asked to audition for a part in a film with Arnie.
What?
Yes.
What? Now, I heard he was going to be doing something. What is this all about?
It's called Kung Fury.
Okay.
And it was originally, there was a film produced, a 30-minute film produced. I think it was in 2015. It went to Cannes. It went to loads of film festivals. It's mad. I mean, it's absolutely mad. It's a really stupid, weird, goofball film with lots of crazy shit that happens. There's arcade machines that come to life and fight with people and have to put quarters in to keep themselves going and fighting. There's Hitler in it. The Hitler's name, Thor's hammer. Thor's in it. Thor is just an absolute piss take situation, and there's loads of sort of Vikings working out, and they're all obsessed with training, and it's just a bit mad.
Okay.
Anyway, I was asked to audition for a feature length version of this with Michael Fassbender and Arnold Schwarzenegger. So they sent me over a script. I was going to try and learn the skit, and this was when I got ill anyway. And then I realized the film dates were going to clash with my holiday. So I messaged them back and said, look, I'm on holiday these dates. Is this going to be a problem? And they just said, oh, hang on, don't send us your audition in yet. We'll let you know. And I've not heard a thing since. So it's probably gone now.
Oh, man, that's too bad.
But I was to play Thor.
Okay.
That is, I don't think I was the look they were going for either, to be fair, because when I watched the original version,
yeah,
the guy that played Thor was obviously he was obviously a bodybuilder. He was quite lean. He was quite old. He was in his 50s or possibly even older.
Okay.
But it was such an odd film.
So yeah.
It's called Kung Fury.
Huh. Well, I have to look for that one when it comes out. Unfortunately, I would have loved to have seen you in that. That would have been great.
Well, ain't happening.
All right. I'm going to pull up our questions here. We had a few questions from the last episode that we didn't get to. Dave, are you familiar with coenzyme Q10, how to take and what to stack with it efficiently? I'm not sure. I haven't used it personally. I mean, I had attempted to years ago and I never got into it. Have you had any experience?
No.
No? All right.
I will have a look for next week, coenzyme Q10.
Okay.
I believe it's quite good for heart health and a few other bits and bats, but it's not one I've ever actually really looked into. You see it crop up a lot in health supplementation just as a sort of added ingredient.
Yeah.
But I'll have a proper look at it. I'll tell you, actually, it wouldn't be a good or bad idea to get Richard Fox. Foster on one day.
Richard Foster, who is he?
Yeah, he runs Strong Nutrition.
All right, yeah, let's absolutely do it.
And when he comes, very clued up when it comes to supplements.
Okay, well, sounds good.
And very straight up as well.
I'm looking at what we've got going on here for other questions. We'll get back to the CoQ10. Why are so many people interested in SARMs and not just taking traditional orals? That's probably from Sambo.
Probably because they don't want to feel like they've gone the whole way into steroids. A lot of people look at SARMs as non-steroidal and therefore not on gear and therefore not a roided and still natural.
Mm.
And I think for a lot of people, certain issues is possibly legalities as well, particularly stateside.
Sure.
Some people just may be uncomfortable with legal status of steroids and just not feel that, you know, that's for them.
Hmm.
Obviously, steroids are quite, most people now are very aware that steroids do have some unhealthy side effects if you're not careful. So there's that element as well. And SARMs are generally well tolerated and generally a lot less stressful on the body than the steroid would be. So for a lot of people, it's a good toe dipper.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Now, I've seen a lot of your transformations, people that you've worked with, that you've helped put on mass, clients of yours. Have any of them been people that were into SARMs? And if so, what kind of results have you seen?
I've got one at the moment, and I'm impressed.
Yeah,
it is definitely. I mean, the guy's a good trainer.
Hmm.
You know, he does push, but I think we're at about 6-7 kilo gain so far.
Okay.
Minimal change in condition, massive strength gains. Sam, he's had no full deadlifting in his program at all.
Okay.
So he just fancied to have a go, and he deadlifted for the first time in probably 3 months, 4 months.
Hmm.
He's been on his SARMs 5-6 weeks, maybe 7 weeks now. And he put 40 kilo on his PB.
Okay.
And did 3 reps with it.
Hmm.
And like I say, he's made solid weight gain, very minimal condition changes, and generally done really, really well. And he was running YK and RAD 140.
Okay. I've never used the RAD 140. I used YK for about a week, and then I ditched it because I was just starting to break out. I was getting like little surface acne over my shoulder and arms.
He's running very low doses as well. We're only looking at sort of 20 milligrams of one and 20 milligrams of the other.
Okay. Interesting.
But no, he's very, I mean, he was going to not use anything at all.
Yeah.
And then he decided he wanted to try a little bit of SARMs. He's used gear in the past.
Huh.
But his results have been far beyond what he's done when he cycled in the past. But I mean, even when he cycled, he was very, very low end, beginner level sort of doses, you know, 400-500 mega test.
Yeah, yeah.
40 mega D-ball sort of stuff.
Well, still, even with a cycle like that, it's interesting to know that a SARM could still have such a strong effect, because I feel like, you've been using gear for a while, it's too late to go back to SARMs.
Well, he stayed off, I think he was off for about 2 years.
Okay.
So I think he hadn't used anything for about 2 years. Like I say, he's very good when it comes to the training. He does work hard.
Okay.
I wouldn't say he's got an absolute mental intense workout, but he will just lock into a movement and just boom, 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 until he just doesn't move.
Okay. So he's a hard trainer.
Yeah, he's a quality trainer.
Gotcha.
Holds his form, doesn't lose form when he's starting to fail, and will just keep trying and just doesn't move anymore. But he's not an aggressive trainer. He's a very insular trainer. He goes very much into himself, quite quiet, and just focuses and just does the job. But yeah, he's grown tremendously. He's done really well. I've been actually quite surprised myself.
Nice.
Especially what we're getting out of this.
Nice.
So they have their place, you know, and it's where you are on the ladder of usage, really, I suppose. You know, what rung are you on? You know, have you just stepped on, or have you been climbing for a while? And that will be, I mean, I even see people who cycle that will put them in their downtime as a bridging drug, so to speak. You know, they'll blast crews going to TRT, but then put SARMs in.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
They can be a useful tool, and they're not useless, definitely not. They do have a return. But, you know, I've said this many times, the simple rule is this, that the greater the return from the drugs, the more they're going to stress your body and the more you're going to risk.
Sure, sure.
And so the lower down. But for someone to put a good, solid, and I'm not saying it's all muscle, but I'm saying visually, there's very little condition change.
Okay, nice.
If anything, he looks a little bit leaner.
Nice. You know, kind of a generic question here. Thoughts on carb cycling? This is from Jay-Z Bodybuilding. And that's not to pick on him. It's just like that's such a big topic to say. I know Scott Stevenson has a pet peeve with that question. Thoughts on, you know, fill in the blank. I mean, there's so much that you really could say. I mean, let's talk about it in a bulking sense, Dave. I know that, you know, for me, a lot of times what I've done with people is I'll start stacking up more food on particular days where there's going to be more effort exerted. Do you do that at all, or are your diets, they're straight across? So you get 300 grams on a non-training day, 300 grams on a training day, and then when you increase it to 350, it's 350 across the board.
I think at the end of the day, we sort of, most people on the same sort of playing field now, that it's not daily caloric intake that's really important. It's the average over a period of, say, 7 to 10 days.
Okay.
Because our daily inputs and output can vary so much.
Sure.
So I've never seen the point to lower carbs just because you're not training, because you are, at the end of the day, trying to recover.
Sure.
And it's one day.
Yeah.
We all know we don't get fat in one day. So I prefer to average them out. A few, and I have had a few where I've maybe put a little bit more notes work out on, say, leg day.
Hold on, you're kind of breaking up, Dave. So you, just to reiterate, okay, because you're kind of breaking up, our connection is pretty poor today for some reason. You're very, very fuzzy. But you said that I broke it. I know. You said that you you sometimes put a little bit more on leg day, but otherwise you keep it pretty leveled out.
But that'll be post workout.
Okay.
So I've had a few clients that have particularly struggled post legs to crash.
Okay.
So put a little bit more fast acting in post workout just to try and help that, just the energy level recovery, and that's usually based because of particularly the job they do, or something of that nature, where they can't be dying after legs. They need to carry on and be getting up and doing stuff. So, but generally speaking, I keep it fairly consistent and fairly even.
Okay.
I find the more consistent you are with your diet, the easier it is to then make changes and see direct results.
Yeah.
Where when you're upping and downing stuff all the time, you don't see changes results that quickly.
Sure.
If you're on a constant 300 grams of carbs every day, every day, every day, every day, every day, every day, and then all of a sudden you put 350 in, you will see the effect of that 350 straight away.
Yeah.
Where if you're 350, 300, 350, 300, 200, 350, 200, 300, you don't see the changes. So, and just, I don't know, but me personally, I always struggled when food intake changed from day to day, because it was just such a pain in it. Oh shit, no, this day I've got to eat that little bit more, this day I've got to have a little bit more of that, where it's the same every day. It was like routine, it's this, I'm just throwing it in.
Yeah,
but
there's something to be said about the simplicity.
There's something to be said, though, about variety for people keeping it interesting. And some people can't cope with high volume of food day in, day out, day in, day out. They need at least a day or 2 days a week where food volume's dropped a little bit.
Okay.
So a lot of it will also depend on how well the person's digestive system's working, how gut healthy are they, and other factors like that come into play there as well. Mm. But like you say, you could go on with variables on this forever and a day. And some people, it's just a case of fit and lifestyle.
Yeah.
My tea's ready, apparently.
Oh.
Sometimes it's just a case of fit and lifestyle. You know, I have clients that eat 3 meals a day.
Yeah.
Because they just physically can't, because of their work commitments and their lifestyle commitments, do anything else.
No additional shakes, just those 3 meals.
No, just 3 meals.
And they're progressing on that.
Yeah, but okay. They're big meals.
Okay, so you might have a high volume of food over a 3-meal plan. Some people, I think, wouldn't be able to stomach that much at once.
No. I'm not a personal fan of it. I don't particularly like it myself, but I have a couple of people that really enjoy it.
Okay.
And they are ready for the next feed when it comes around.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's like the training. Well, you know, you've got to find something that, one, you can stick at, and that, two, you enjoy and works for you. Otherwise, you're not going to do it.
Mm.
If the diet's too complex or the diet's too confusing, you're going to struggle to stick to it. So there's a balance between optimum nutrition, as a lot of people would tell us we have to do, and how we have to time carbs and such, this, that, and the other, as against just being able to bloody do it and just having a routine that's maintainable.
Yeah.
And some people's diets are so complex and so difficult to maintain, they're never going to stick to them.
Mm.
Not a million years.
I'm assuming he probably was asking carb cycling for dieting. And I will say that for the majority of people, I think that at some point, some type of a cycle is of benefit. I've dieted people down where we haven't needed to change anything for a really long time, and they can eat the same thing day in, day out. But even if you're doing like one high day a week, you know, a load day of some type, I would still consider that a cycle. You know, you fill and then you deplete. Yeah.
I agree, and I do think people say that you met, you know, there's a lot of conflict within, I mean, everyone now just says it's calories in versus calories out. I don't quite actually agree with that, though that is a basic fundamental. I think speeds in metabolic rate and metabolic rate can slow if you've been on the same set plan for too long and it's too restrictive.
Yeah.
And you'll find a lot of people, if you diet them hard and tight very early on, you can actually bring the food back up then. They will still respond quite well, even at slightly higher volumes of food, because the metabolic rate's now working so much more efficiently. But yeah, I mean, there's a mental element to giving people a refeed, for argument's sake, or a higher carb day.
Yeah.
Definitely. Not only in the fact that they just feel like they're eating more food, but also in the fact that they're going to mentally be greater clarity if they've got more carbs in for a day.
Yeah.
And I do think it does help in the way of staying off your metabolic rate starting to slow and getting a bit sluggish.
I'm going to go to the questions we have in our thread here. This one is from Kyle Becker. He says, currently dealing with a shoulder injury. Doc is thinking it's a rotator cuff or labrum. Thoughts on diet and supplementation, supplemental changes as I take the next 2 to 3 weeks off?
Well, calories would have to be reduced to some degree, depending on where you are and what you're doing. I mean, it depends, are you bulking, are you cutting, what are you doing? But you don't have to reduce your calorie expenditure just because you're not training your shoulders.
I like that, yeah.
You can still keep the same food and just change the form of the output.
Okay.
So throw in a bit more cardio.
Okay.
Do legs an extra day a week, particularly if it's a lagging body part.
Yeah.
You know, there's other exercises you can do that don't involve your shoulder injury.
I think Kyle has some decent legs, but nonetheless, we can always use an extra leg day, right?
Always. Always. But you know, whatever. But you, so if you're going to cut your, obviously, calorie output, then you're going to have to cut your calorie input. If you replace the output with something else, then you don't need to.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to make any specific changes to the type of foods you eat. That can stay the same. Same with supplements. There's no real need to change supplements. Depending on what you do with the stresses you put in your body. So if you're still training legs hard and you're still training, you may still be able to train back. You know, not all shoulder injuries stop back workouts. So you might still be able to train arms. So it might just be chest and shoulders that are affected.
Yeah.
Then you're going to probably maintain your supplementation as it is. If you go to a completely different style of training, you might change to a very high volume style of training. You might start doing a lot of high volume cardio. You might need to look at some extra joint support or some extra cod liver oils or those sort of things, just because the stresses on your body is going to be different.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Moving on to the next question. This is from David Spencer. Hi, lads. A few questions for the show. Not personal use, as I've used them in the past, so wanted yours and Dave's view on them. Thoughts on the following. Yohimbine, or he actually says Yohimbi for weight loss. I can never say this word. I see it in a lot of supplements. The subutramine for appetite craving control. He says, I know it raises heart levels a few numbers and got banned due to side effects. So Yohimbi to start. What do you think of Yohimbi? He specifically says Yohimbi and not Yohimbine. I could tell you this offhand. I would stay away from Yohimbi bark and I would go with Yohimbine, which is the standardized extract of Yohimbi. That is very good for, it can be very good for fat loss. Issue can be people like myself don't process it well, so it doesn't break down in my system. And I learned this through listening to a podcast with Scott Stevenson a few years ago now. But I'd take, Dave, even a small dose, like 2.5 milligrams of Yohimbine, and 7 hours later, I was still like clammy and sweating and gross. It's once I take it, it doesn't break down, so it just stays in my system long term.
It's just a normal day, isn't it, for you?
Yeah, I can't handle that stuff, man. Yeah. You can't handle it. Some people do fine. I've worked with bikini competitors that, you know, a 40-year-old lady who loved taking it, and she told me she'd take like 10, 15 milligrams. You wouldn't be hearing from me for 2 days if I took that.
Yeah, it's like many things, isn't it? It's very person dependent. It's not going to ever be in the power lines of T3s or Clay and all that sort of stuff. But still, a viable fat burner. And like we were seeing talking earlier on about the client with the SARMs.
Yeah.
You know, with a well disciplined athlete, it can be very, very effective.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of appetite suppressants.
Mm.
I have mixed views on this. They're useful, but I think they sort of make patch holes in poor dieting.
Okay.
I'm a hungry git, I'm very much so, but I think if you sort of need to just almost discipline yourself a little bit, because our hunger responses are actually quite important in communicating to us what's going on.
Yeah.
And I don't think killing them off is particularly a healthy way to look at it. And it generally, people go for appetite suppressants because they have poor willpower.
Hmm.
And, you know, fair enough, if your willpower's that bad and you're that wanting to get lean, then it can be effective and it does help. But, you know, our hunger responses are there for a reason. They're part of our survival mechanisms. And I would rather be looking at what can we do within the diet to manage these hunger a bit better. You know, do we swap carb sources away from stuff like rice, and do we look more towards potatoes because they're more satiable?
Mm-hmm.
Let's have a look at protein levels and see where we go. And rather than be looking at a drug that is literally just there as a chemical to stop your appetite.
Yeah. I've used ephedrine for fat burning, and as a side effect, I've got appetite suppression from it. And I feel like
most stimulants will drop your appetite. I mean, caffeine's got an appetite suppressant.
Yeah, yeah.
So most stimulants will drop your appetite, and you know, ephedrine has that effect, but it's definitely not its primary function. And that's generally due to the fact that the stress it has on the central nervous system, and that's why it kills your appetite. It's why you're not hungry when you're nervous or excited or anxiety. You lose your appetite.
You know, too. You're being stressed. Something I always try to explain to people, you know, if I'm working with somebody who comes to me, they want to get in shape, and they've never been into very good, you know, like single digit body fat shape before. They want to get their abs out even, you know, and they've never been to 10%. Even myself, when I start a diet, all of a sudden, the first thing I realize is like, oh, I'm starting to get hungry. It's a sensation that I'm not used to, you know, because I haven't felt it for a while. And usually the way we're trained in life is that we feel hungry. What do? We put something in our mouth, we eat.
Yeah.
And, you know, that we have a strong emotional connection to food, some of us more than others. I think that the thing that I really have to do, and the thing I try to tell people, is to step back from that and to analyze that. Think about like, well, you know, yeah, I'm hungry. Okay. Is that the end of the world? Not really, no. You know. What's important to me right now is eating this junk food that would make me feel happy for a minute. Is that important to me? Is it more important than my goals? Because I can have one or the other. I can't have both, you know.
That's a very Dorian-esque approach.
Is it?
Dorian, yeah. Someone asked Dorian, how would you deal with not wanting pizza? He says, I don't want pizza. Well, why don't you want pizza? Because pizza doesn't get me my goals.
You gotta believe. Here's the other thing then. You gotta believe that you can achieve those goals. Is it tea time? Is your tea here, Dave?
I'm gonna have to make a move, but I agree. I mean, to some people, hunger is a badge of honor. If I'm hungry, I know I'm where I need to be.
Exactly. I tell myself that for sure.
And that's a good way of looking at what most people perceive as a negative, hunger, a negative, I'm hungry, that's negative,
yeah,
to a positive, I'm hungry, that means that I'm losing fat.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Do you have to go, Dave? Are you out of time?
I do, sir.
All right.
Do, sir. I'm afraid, yes.
All right, guys. Well, in that case, we have a couple more questions. We'll save those for the next episode. Appreciate everybody listening. Appreciate everybody who's posting up these questions. Once again, this will be on episode 30. If you don't hear your question there, then we will pick these back up at episode 31. Guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally, Advices Radio Network. Shop at TrueNutrition.com. Use our code ADVICES for additional savings. And to support what we are doing, go over to crosslands.org.uk. Follow along with Dave. We will see you soon. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
No problem. Take care now.
Advices Radio.